Jesus makes it all right. Say it again, say it. Have a little talk with Jesus. Just a little talk with Jesus. Have a little talk with Jesus. Just a talk with Jesus. Sit down and talk to Jesus. My, just a little talk with Jesus. Have a talk with Jesus. Just a talk with Jesus. And tell him all about your trauma. Tell God all about your trauma. Every heartache. In every situation.
KAYTFM
88.1 Gina Alexandria, 92.5 Greenwood Shreveport,
K223BI
98.9 Monroe West Monroe,
K255BT
100.1 Lake Charles,
K261EB and KQ
Lake Charles, 99.3 St. Joseph Louisiana, Natchez Mississippi,
and online at www.kaytfm.com.
I'm not going nowhere.
Do you miss me?
Oh yeah. I'm not going nowhere until you bless me. Without your blessing, Lord, I can't make it at all. Please,
please, please, please bless me.
trust you too.
And I trust you too.
I'm gonna sit and wait.
I'm gonna sit and wait.
Because you're never too late.
Because you're never too late.
Please, please,
please, please, please, please.
I'm not gonna let you go until you bless me. I'm not gonna let you go until you bless me. Hey, without your blessing, Lord, I can't make it at all.
Please, 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 please,
I got faith in you.
I got faith in you.
And I trust you too.
And I trust you too.
I'm gonna sit and wait.
I'm gonna sit and wait.
Because you're never too late.
Because you're never too late.
Please, Lord, yeah.
Please, please, please,
I got faith in you.
I got faith in you.
And I trust you too.
And I trust you too.
I'm gonna sit and wait.
I'm gonna sit and wait.
Because you're never too late.
Because you're never too late.
Please, Lord.
KAYT and KQJOFM. We're five cities strong all day long. Lead it. We've got Louisiana on lock.
Grab your word and stand with me. I promise I won't be before you long. See, I've been practicing. Ruth 2 and 5 says, "Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this?" Please be seated. Oh, I didn't see if y'all knew where the word was. I was supposed to wait and see if you found it. Oh, gosh. Please be seated. Y'all don't tell Bishop, though, okay? I'm really excited to be speaking here for the very first time. It's also my children's very first time speaking, so I'm glad that they're going to act right all through service and that I won't have to give them the eye or anything. They've been going through boot camp, my children have, because sometimes when they spend a lot of time with their grandparents or aunts and they come home, they forget that they don't have any, you know, that they have home training. So I put them through boot camp where I just get on to them for doing small things that I would usually let slide. And, you know, they've been grounded, but we're working through it. Right, guys? They both act, the thing is that they both act just like me. So Malachi, who is my son, he's 11. When he's grounded, he starts being really helpful around the house. Like, I didn't know he could fold clothes, but evidently he can. He can, like, move the refrigerator and start sweeping. It's really incredible. Mackenzie, on the other hand, she acts just like me too, and that's why I have a book called Lost and Found, because when she gets in a little bit of trouble, she decides, hey, I'm already grounded. Let's see how much fun we can have with this. So I put her in timeout, and she starts praying out loud. Like, how do you correct that, you know? Or I tell her, you know, Kenzie, go up to your room, and she starts swinging off of the doors, which is certainly something that she got from me. But I can tell that both of them are my children. Whenever they're in trouble, they're just different sides of me. And so it's been an incredible journey at seeing yourself in your children as you raise them, because you're not as hard on them. You kind of become a little bit more compassionate because you understand, you know, exactly where they got it from. And then it really does strengthen your prayer life as well. It's interesting because somewhere between the age of 4 and 11, you start to learn that you can't keep doing the same thing that got you in trouble. You know, you start to learn that maybe when I'm in timeout, I need to work a little harder, go the extra mile to get out of this situation. And so the funny thing, though, is that my son, who we're waiting for his report card before we can break some chains in his life, but he's like, Mom, I aced my test. Can I not be grounded anymore? Mom, I folded my clothes. Can I not be grounded anymore? What do you do when you're doing all of the right things, but you still feel like you're grounded? You're passing the test. I'm doing everything you told me to do in your word, but I still feel like I'm being isolated for no reason. What do you do when you start to believe that your isolation is punishment and no longer protection? So that is the stage in which we find Ruth gleaning in the fields. She kept her commitment to her husband. He passed away. She kept her commitment to Naomi. She's bitter. She made it all the way to Bethlehem. Now she's an outcast in the fields, wondering, I assume, when is this going to pay off? I see everyone else around me. I took my faith, and I'm holding on to it, and I'm trying to be strong, and I'm trying to hold it all together. But for some reason, you keep trusting me with struggle. You keep trusting me with the weight of the world on my shoulders. And I'm trying to be strong, and I'm trying to keep the faith, because that's what they tell me to do. But for some reason, I just wish you would take it a little easy on me, because I'm passing all the tests, and I'm doing all the homework, and I'm folding all the clothes, but I'm still breaking on the inside. So we find Ruth in the field wondering, what do I have to do to become better? Doing all the right things, not getting any results. Can you trust God when you feel like he's not there? Or do you take matters into your own hands? I grew up in this church, and I felt like an outcast. I cannot sing, which, you know, as soon as you hear that you're a preacher, everybody wants you to sing, right? I tried. It's not for me. And when I say I tried, I mean I know all the hand movements, all of them. I got moves that you can't even imagine. But the voice just isn't there. And so I can't really preach like Bishop Jakes preached, but who can, you know? So who wants to do that? So I left that part alone, and, you know, I had my son when I was 14, and I felt like, well, I was already an outcast. Now I'm even more of an outcast. So now I feel isolated in my own home, in my own field, and I'm trying to keep the faith. You know, it's so funny that Ruth found herself in the field and feeling like an outcast, because did you know that the other people in the fields were outcasts too? Deuteronomy 24:19 tells us that Mosaic law required that the fields not be harvested wholly, so that the portions could be left for the strangers, the fatherless, and for the widow. So how can you be an outcast amongst your own people? In the church, where it's supposed to be okay to be broken, and I can't show you that I'm hurting. worshiping, praying, lifting my hands, but I can't exactly show you where I'm bleeding because I'm afraid that you'll see that I'm an outcast too. When do we start covering up the fact that we're all outcast? I wonder why the other gleaners in the field didn't say, hey, you over there by yourself, come with us. We're bleeding too. Because I remember sitting in this very church, searching the crowd for someone who could understand the pain that was on my face. Oh, not my face. I meant behind the mask. Behind the mask, like the face that I have when I lay my head down at night and I wonder if anyone else is broken too. And so I wonder, how do you become an outcast in the fields? And so I'm not fitting in the church world, and I started to view my isolation as punishment. My mama always talks about how I wanted to live in the hood. Because I was like, listen, this church thing is not for me. Like, I don't really fit. The Bible's not really that interesting to me. Like, I'm going to be honest because that's what I'm known for. Like, when I was reading the Bible at 13, it doesn't really jump at you. I mean, when Bishop preaches it, it's one thing. But how do you build a relationship with God when you don't really know where to start? And so I decided that it would be easier to build a relationship with the world because there's always a place for the hurting in the world. Always. Always a place for the hurting in the world. Always. Always. Now, it might not be the healthiest place. It might not be the safest place. And you might end up more broken than when you went into the world. But there's always a place for you. And sometimes misery loves company because there's nowhere else to go. So I wonder, when I was reading the text and preparing for the night, that Ruth asked them, could she glean behind the reapers? Not could she glean with them. Could she glean behind them? Isn't it funny how sometimes we don't even feel worthy of being with other people? Because had she known that they were outcasts too, maybe she would have asked, but you don't really know what's going on behind someone else's mask, or if it's a mask, or if it's true. And so you start sticking to yourself. Because if you risk telling your truth and there's no echo on the other side of the room, then you've just exposed your wound to what? I think it's so easy for us. It would be so much easier if we bonded over our condition and our suffering and started comforting the fact that we don't have it all together, but we're trying, instead of isolating someone who sinned differently than we sinned. So now you an outcast for what you did, and I'm an outcast over there for what I did. But couldn't we all just be outcasts searching for grace together? Isn't that what Christianity is supposed to be? We're not supposed to fit in. We're supposed to be outcasts. So when did we start being outcast in church? Like, we're already outcast in the world, but now we have to be an outcast in the church too? I can't speak because I had my baby at 14. I have to pay for that forever. There's no recovery. There's no redemption. So what are we preaching? What are we preaching? And how do we save the people in the world if we aren't willing to admit that we understand what it's like to be lost? That we understand what it's like to not have it all together? And that we're all just wearing masks, dressing up, clapping our hands, and going home and crying at night. I got tired of it. Because there's something about coming together that helps us when we come together for the right reasons. When two or three are gathered in his name, there I will be in the midst. I was preparing and I was looking at what happens when you get two babies, twins, and they're co-bedding because one of them was born prematurely, and then the other one starts suffering. And so they initially start off in separate incubators, but when they notice that one of them is suffering, they put them together because there's something about having that touch that makes the other one realize they're not alone. And I can borrow some of your strength, and I can borrow some of your hope, and I can borrow some of your faith. But you have to be willing to admit that you're suffering first. It's not enough to say, I'm going to stay right here in my little incubator because I think I'm going to be okay. And I could probably help you if I open my mouth, but then I would have to tell everyone that I don't have it together. So how many people are we losing because we aren't willing to co-bed in our suffering? To admit that we're all in intensive care and that we're all still trying. Instead, we see our isolation as punishment. But what about those moments when God calls you to be alone? Because even the twins have to be separated when they reach a certain point. There is a point in your life when you continue to develop in Christ where he might call you to be alone. And if you aren't careful, you'll see your isolation as punishment, and you'll never fully understand the lessons that he's trying to teach you. I thought that because I didn't fit into what I thought church was supposed to be, that I should take matters into my own hands and try to fit somewhere else. And I ended up hurting myself over and over again because I wouldn't accept that I had been isolated on purpose. On purpose. It wasn't punishment. God wasn't just being mean to me. He didn't see. He saw all of these wonderful things that were happening here at the Potter's house. And I didn't feel like I was a part of it. But that wasn't intentional. He had set me apart. But we resent the fact that we've been set apart because we don't get to look like the other gleaners in the field. And we just want to fit in. And we just want to feel okay about what we've been through. Can we tell whose you are when you're isolated? When my kids are grounded, those are my kids. Ken still being bad, that's me. Kai going the extra mile, that's me. Isn't it funny, when your children are grounded, you can still tell that they're yours? But when God isolates us, we don't feel like he knows who we are anymore. Could it be that he still knows us even when we're isolated? Could it be that he is trusting us to see that, can I still recognize you when I'm not doing everything you want me to do? Can you keep the faith then? When you're doing all the right things and things aren't going your way, can you trust that the isolation may have a purpose? See, because on the other side of Ruth being isolated, Boaz was looking at her, but Ruth didn't know that. Who's looking at you in your isolation? And how you handle this test, and how you handle this trial, and how you handle this storm. Can I still tell that God's got his hand on you? Or are you trying to move the hand so much that you out there struggling on your own for no reason? Because it didn't go the way you wanted it to. And I'm not talking just about you, I'm talking about me, because I tried to create my fairy tale. I said, you know what? I messed up. I'm an outcast. I'll accept that. I'll fix it myself. I don't have to play by the church rules. I'll just go out in the world and I'll be an outcast and I'll roam all through these fields and world and I'll do what I want to because I'm going to try and create my fairy tale because I don't really feel like I fit anywhere. And when you start to view the isolation as punishment, it starts to be solitary confinement in your own mind. And do you know what happens when you start to confine yourself? I was studying and they said that solitary confinement, that the fastest thing they see is that the prisoners no longer mind soiling themselves. Because no one can see it. How many times do we start soiling ourselves? Because no one can see that we've been confined in our mind, the things you tell yourself. His grace doesn't apply to you because you went too far. You're no longer able to access mercy because something happened to you when you were a child. You brought that rape on yourself. You're damaged goods because you were molested. How do we soil ourselves over and over again because we're isolating our pain? Infecting ourselves with our pain over and over again. So it should come as no surprise that we end up in solitary confinement in our own minds, projecting what we think others think about us. I imagine if I was Ruth in the field, I would be like, they don't want to talk to me, no way. Everything I touch is bitter, dead, gone. I'll be by myself anyway. Because they don't know, and I don't want to tell them that I'm soiling myself. I'd rather be in this field a little bit behind, trying to do the best I can, trying to tell myself that maybe, just maybe, if I do things this way, I'll be okay. I don't think we should despise the moments when we don't fit in. Because had Ruth fit in the way she wanted to, would she have stood out to Boaz? Would she have even said, if you were exactly where you wanted to be in life, could God still use you? I mean, you would be where you wanted to be. But does that serve a purpose for God? So how can we use our isolation as preparation? They say that solitary confinement in prison is used as the method to control the prisoners. They want to break them. You playing by my rules now. So when I tell you to go to bed, if you don't go to bed, I'm going to lock you up and I'm going to break you over and over again until you give up your control. Don't you know that God will break you over and over again until you give up your control? That you'll be in solitary confinement in your own world, trying to make things right, trying to bring things together for your own. And God will say, until you give up your control, until you realize that you started this mess and I'm going to clean it up. Not you, because you're in over your head. But we don't want to admit that we're in over our head. We want to fight back. We want to hold on to that little bit of control that makes us think that we are still capable of cleaning it up. But we created the mess. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I don't. I want to do right. I want to find my way. I want to honor you with my life, but I really just don't know how anymore. What is going to be your breaking point? Because when he finally gets the lesson through and the prisoners finally give up control, then they can be released back into general population. Because now I can trust you again. I can trust you to be out there in your own, in the world, but not of the world. See, we want everything so fast. Had I moved into the hood like I told my mother I wanted to at 14, no telling what type of drug I would have ended up on. If he would have really let you have your way. If he would have really gave you the man you wanted and really gave you the life you wanted and the finances you wanted, you don't even know. Maybe you needed to be broke so you can learn how to budget. No, let's keep it real. Maybe you needed to be hurt over and over so that you could appreciate a good man. Maybe. We don't know why your pain has isolated you, but until you stop seeing it as punishment, you'll never get the lesson from it. You'll never be able to give up control and let God have his way as long as you're still holding on to what you want, how you want it, when you want it. Gotta have it. I learned that when I was studying the solitary confinement, Martha McClintock, who is a professor at the University of Chicago, said that the isolation may actually serve a really good purpose, because once a mouse had been isolated, they realized that once they set them free, that they kind of stayed on the edge and they didn't venture into the middle of the cage anymore because they had learned boundaries. Is your isolation teaching you boundaries? You won't go too far, so I'm going to have to isolate you. If I give you everything that you want right now, you're going to lose it. So you got to let me mold you. And that might mean that I have to break you a little bit, but I won't break you without purpose. But you'll break yourself over and over again. So when do we learn to finally let go and really let God? I started to feel like I was just like, you know, this black sheep of the family. And so I finally decided, you know what, I'm going to accept the isolation and realize that maybe, just maybe, God has something better for me. So I started to do the right thing even when I was isolated. And for me, isolation was living in Virginia. I was away from home, away from church. It was about 3 years that I was gone. And I was like, I'm going to do all the right things, though. I got my little fairy tale. I got everything I wanted. And I was like, now I'm going to do the right thing, sow the right seeds, and then maybe God will bless my life, right? And I kept losing over and over again. And I was cooking dinner, and things wasn't going right. And I was folding the clothes, and I was like, being this Proverbs 31 wife, you know, like I'm doing all of the right things, but I still felt like I was losing. And I was wondering if maybe because I didn't give up control before, and now I wanted God to take over. Like, I wanted to get it together my way. And then I gave it to him. This is what I want you to work on. Nothing else. Work on this. See, it's pretty now. See, I went out and got what everybody told me to do, and I went and recovered from the pregnancy, and I went out and did everything they told me to do in church, and now here you go, God, bless me. And he said, that's not it yet. I don't want your perfect little picture and your perfect idea of what you think you need. I want to give you what I have for you. I want to give you the hopes that I have for you. See, because you're thinking too small. You think I called you to be somebody's wife. You thought that that was the only way to recover? What about the thousands of women who need to know that they weren't alone? Who's going to help them if you settle here for what you think is enough? Your isolation in Virginia, for me, my isolation, I had to come home back to where it started because I realized at some point that maybe I'd missed the mark. And maybe I was trying to comfort my misery, and God was trying to confront it. So I came back to the place where I felt like an outcast first. Sitting over there in that little section, waving my hands, crying my tears. I mean, the ugly cry. The real good ugly one. Because I was hurting, and I felt like I passed the test, I was doing the homework, and I was still failing my courses. And I wanted to know if God would consider helping me find my way back. And the thing about that is that you have to be humble enough to admit that you got it wrong in the first place. You have to be willing to admit that you tried it your way and that it didn't work. And do you know how much pride it takes to make an announcement after a big old wedding? All on Essence. They done stole the pictures. They floating on the internet. And to say, I know y'all said congratulations. And I know y'all was real happy for me, and I know y'all was praying for me, and I appreciate y'all praying for me, but maybe I should have been praying for what God wanted and not what I wanted, because he gave it to me, and now I feel like I'm being broken. Be careful what you ask for, because he just might give it to you, and you just might get it and still be empty. And still feel isolated. And still think you're being punished. When all he was trying to do was protect you from the very feeling that keeps you awake at night. From the very pain that haunts your every move and every decision. I was trying to protect you from that. But you saw my isolation as punishment. So here you go. Be free. Have your way. deal with it? Are you willing to let go of what you want and accept that God may have something that requires you to hurt a little? That when he told Satan not to touch Job, and Job said, though he slay me, yet shall I trust in him, that Job really meant it. And it's not enough to quote the scripture if you don't really trust him anyway. Because when he slays you, you might cry. And when he slays you, you might bleed a little. Because it doesn't come easy. Everything has a cost. Everything has a cost. And you may have to let some things go in order to grab what he has for you. And are you willing to let go of your dream? The one that you thought would save you from being an outcast. See, that's the thing. There's a pride that comes with feeling like, I want to recover. See, my heart was never in the wrong place. And I think that God protects us even when we're wrong, because he knows we're trying to do right. We're just a little misdirected. Because I thought that I was playing by the church rules. And it's not about these rules that we create to make people feel like this is what it takes to be in church. What about the relationship? What about that secret pain and those fears? What about the tears? Like, okay, I was fierce. What about the tears? Like, okay, I'll wear a skirt down to my ankles, but I'm bleeding on the inside. Who? What do I put on for that? Okay, I won't wear no makeup, but I'm still wearing shame. And I need to know, what do I put on for that? When will we stop teaching people to play church and instead to really have a relationship with God? Because the rules of playing in church is why I left. Because I don't like to play by the rules. And that's why it's so funny that people are like, oh my, you're so transparent and you're so this, because I insisted that if this is going to be how you use me to help someone else, then I want to do it my way. And that means that I want someone else who may have felt like I did sitting in the church to know that they weren't okay. I want to reach those people. And I want them to know that they can look around, and I'll tell you about the tears. We've crying the same tears. See, we all have pain. It's so funny. I started blogging in the middle of one of my most, you know, terrible times in my life. And I actually just wrote a blog about this. And I said in my blog, it wasn't that I was blogging because I wanted a book deal. Because I never liked the stage. I never liked the microphone. Like, I have, before I came here, I had to, like, really consecrate my heart, because I get nervous, like, my knees start shaking, and so I have to, like, really give myself away to God. So when I started blogging, it wasn't like, this is going to be something that turns into something. I just needed to know that, I just needed to get the pain out. And I couldn't really do it at church because I didn't want to be judged for having pain, because all of you all look like you had it together too. So I didn't want to be the one to say, yeah, Bishop just finished preaching and I'm still hurting. So I started the blog, and I didn't know that there were other people who were hurting too, who were struggling too. And when I started writing, and I realized that there were women who were 60 years old who understood the pain that I was talking about from having to play church and having to play by the rules and having to do it the way everyone else told them to do, that it was still 60 years. They were 60 years old and felt like they were tired of these rules. And these. I said, well, I don't know that I could put up with those shenanigans for that long. Because we live in a real world, so we should have a real church. We should have a real church where we realize that no, you shouldn't have sex before marriage, but you do sometimes, and that you can still be used by God anyway. and that his grace is sufficient, not just because we say it and sing it and we mean sufficient for the sins that no one knows about, but he's sufficient for the sins that we can see too. See, because my sin was different because it was walking beside me, but, and you got to hide yours, and that must be really nice, but at the end of the day, I know you got one too. And what a disservice it is to the world when we crucify them for their sins when Christ died for that. Constantly crucifying people over and over again who are saying, I really just wanted help when I came in here. When I walked into this church, you want to know why people are hurt by church? Because when they walk in those doors, they wanted help. And they left with an infection. They left feeling like they didn't have a place. The one place we tell them, you come to church and everything's going to be okay. But nobody's willing to say that they're not okay. So in church, for what? If we're not going to be real, if we're not going to live a life that leads people back to Christ, not to us. I don't need you to worship me. I'm a mess. I want to tell you about someone who took my mess and gave it purpose. Who took the things that I thought would always hold me back and catapulted me into a future I never knew. People get sick of me saying over and over, I can't believe that I have a book deal. I can't. I didn't want it. I didn't want a book deal. I wanted someone to know that I was hurting. I was crying for help. But my blog became an incubator. And we started to co-bed. And I felt a little bit better knowing that I wasn't in it by myself. I just started saying the words that I thought I needed to hear. And it turns out that someone else needed to hear them. And if those words healed her, well, maybe they can heal me too. We take on the role of being someone's savior. Like, I want to be responsible for your soul, and if you don't do what I tell you to do, then I'm going to sit you in the back of the church, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. But God didn't call us to do that. Don't we overcome by our testimony? Don't we? I mean, if we're going to follow the rules of the Bible, right? Y'all want me to follow these rules? Didn't it say that we overcome by the testimony? Well, my testimony's not pretty. But I bet I could still overcome. I bet you I will still overcome. There are moments when your growth depends on the isolation. It is preparation. It is preparation. Sitting over there feeling like I didn't fit in. But how do you become a leader unless you become a little bit comfortable with being isolated? With recognizing that you can't do what everyone else does because your call is different from theirs. Everything that I'm doing right now with the speaking and the writing, like, it was always in me. But I was too busy looking at the punishment of not fitting in to really develop the gifts that come when you can be isolated. To recognize that when you're grounded, you get to focus on the homework. You get to focus on the homework. You get to really hone the gift, but God is so merciful that even when we see the isolation as punishment, that he uses the mistakes that we made as in the punishment to go towards the development. That means that maybe I was always meant to be a writer, but because I learned about pain and the punishment, that I could help in the pain of developing purpose. Maybe the gift is always in you, but the isolation is when you really determine what's going to be the best use of your gift, the best use of your purpose. How do I prepare you to speak to hurting women unless I hurt you? How can we use this isolation as preparation instead of just feeling like, why me? I'm doing all the right things and I'm still failing. Why me? Why me? Over and over again, and we miss it. We miss the purpose. We miss the lesson because we weren't willing to really accept, to really let go of the control, to really let go of it. See, because even in solitary confinement, the prisoner knows that the more you act up, the longer your time in here is going to be. Mm-hmm. I watched the whole documentary. The warden said, you're going to be mine. When you get finished throwing stuff up against the wall and soiling yourself, and when you get finished with all of that, you still going to be mine. You get finished lying, drinking, shooting up, doing whatever you got to do to try and hide from this isolation. You're still going, I put my name on you. You are my child. I know who you are even when you're in trouble. Even when you're gleaning behind the fields, even when you feel like an outcast, you're my outcast. Do you understand that? And I've set you apart for such a time as this. Do you understand that? That is bigger than how you feel. That is bigger than the pain, and it's bigger than the whispers that you think that they're saying about you. You think they're talking about you. When I get finished, they're not going to be able to stop talking about you. So if you can't deal with the whispers in the field, then I can't bring you out of it. Bring you out of it. You see, because when Ruth got finished in the fields and Boaz pulled her out, she knew something that Boaz didn't really know that well because she had been in his field. So she became a helpmate because she understood his own business better than he did. It's more harvest over here. On this time of the year, this is the best place to get the best harvest. But she had to be in the field first, and she had to learn while she was in the field. Otherwise, she couldn't have been a helpmate to Boaz. Are you learning in your isolation? Or are you resenting the fact that you've been isolated altogether? Are you resenting the fact that you've been isolated altogether? And missing out on the preparation that comes. See, because had I just given up my control after my pregnancy and said, God, just have your way and order my steps. But I was so intent on creating my own fairy tale that it wasn't until I was in a bad situation, far away from home, isolated even more than I had to be by my own choice. Isolated more than necessary, in solitary confinement by my own choice, my own decisions, my own mistake. That's when he said, now you can let go of your control. Because you don't have your mama to call. Your daddy can't come save you. You don't have a church. You're not going to run into anybody at the grocery store who looks in your eyes and says, I can tell you're not okay. Because you know how that's how you Potter's House people do. I love y'all. Y'all be all in our business. You know, girl, you okay, girl? But sometimes you need someone to make you look at yourself. Are you okay? But I didn't want that. I didn't want to see myself because at the time, I wasn't really sure that I would like what I was seeing. So instead, I took on the role of being busy instead of really delving into the fact that maybe I had been isolated on purpose. So it took me 10 years to really come to grips with the fact that it's okay not to play by the church rules, that you can still have a relationship with God. It took me 10 years to realize that you don't have to sing to be used by God. It took me 10 years to realize that God didn't just call a man and not call his family too, that everyone had a place in this ministry and that maybe I didn't see it, but God did. And if I would have just trusted him, he would have guided me along the way. I didn't want to be lost, but I thank God that I was found. See, the thing is, when you're fighting against God, there's no way that you can win anyway. You just lose worse and worse. I mean, and I'm telling you the truth. I mean, eviction notices and everything. Like, you're just trying to do it your way, and you just keep on losing over and over again until you're finally willing to just let go and let God have his way in your life. So the very place that Ruth felt like an outcast, she ended up owning the field. And the very place I felt like an outcast, I'm teaching Wednesday night Bible study in. What if you're being isolated for a purpose you don't even see yet? You think Ruth knew she was going to own the field? Ruth was trying to survive and just making the best out of what she had left. She could have left the fields. She could have said, if they're not going to walk with me while I glean, I'm going to leave. They don't want me here, so I'm going to leave. You got to be willing to fight. To fight for your place. To fight for your moment. And to trust that God wouldn't bring you somewhere and not have a provision for you. There was a provision here at the Potter's house for me. And I kept trying to figure out what it was on my own. And God was just saying, rest here. I'm developing you. It's too soon. You're not ready yet. I've got you isolated for a reason, but I kept fighting it. I need to know right now, because my sister's, she's a wonderful singer. All of my brothers can sing. They walk around the house harmonizing. It's real annoying and very much so. And my sister can pray down thunder, like literally. You'll be like, is it raining? And y'all know Bishop Jakes, okay. And my mother can dig into your soul with a whisper, like a whisper down into your soul. And I didn't really know what I had. But so I did know I like to take care of people. And so I had my son, and I like to take care of him. And then I thought, well, maybe God is just calling me to, like, be a wife and take care of someone. So that's what I'm going to go with. And I'm going to create my dream around that of taking care of people. And when I tell you, I would have been completely fine being a stay-at-home mom, like washing the dishes, cleaning, doing laundry. But it was, like, other stuff in the marriage that I wouldn't have been okay with. And we'll talk about that later with, like, a police officer and stuff. Well, y'all can read the book, Lost and Found. It comes out in April. But when I was really, really going through it, and I felt like, you know what, I'm doing all of the right things, and I'm trying to play this perfect role. It wasn't until that I finally gave up my dream, my purpose, that I could realize that there were book deals and TV shows and so much more than I wanted. I tweet probably once a week. I say, my life is everything I ever needed it to be and nothing I ever wanted. Nothing I ever knew was possible for me. I was willing to settle for being an outcast. I was willing to settle for the isolation being punishment, and I was going to take my wounds and take my scars, take a licking and keep on ticking. But God didn't call us to be miserable. Even in our isolation, can you find joy in the middle of this storm? Can you make peace? Not just have it. Can you make it? Can you do what is necessary to have peace? Can you go through a divorce if it means you can have your mind? Can you move back home if it means telling your girlfriend after you've been lying on Instagram and Facebook about having the perfect situation? Can you admit to them that, well, maybe I was just trying to keep up with y'all because mine ain't exactly where it should be? Are you willing to humble yourself enough to be in the fields, even if you don't feel like you're supposed to be there. Even if you feel like I'm doing all of the right things, I made my commitment and I'm still losing, are you still willing to trust God through it all? If your husband doesn't come, if you don't get the job, if the kids never come back home, if the pain never goes away, can you trust that God has a purpose for it? Can you believe that your heartbreak can be used to help someone else? That maybe he's not just putting you through for no reason. And there's nothing like the moment when someone says, because you told your story, because you shared your pain, because you were brave enough to say, you know what? I'm not okay. That somebody was saying, I'm not okay either. You know how many people we lose because we're not willing to say we aren't okay? Because we aren't willing to say that I am isolated. See, because even when you're isolated, sometimes you lie and you say you're okay. And God's not saying that in your isolation that you have to pretend that you have it together. But even if you're broken, can you trust me? I'm not saying that you have to present something perfect in your isolation. But even though you're hurting, will you trust me? I'm not telling you that the hurt has to go away, that the pain has to go away. But can you believe that even in the midst of this storm that I'm here, I may be asleep down on the bottom of the boat, but it's only because I know what's on the other side of this. It's only because I know what's on the other side of this. It's only because I know that there's someone who's holding an opportunity for you, and I need you to stay right here so that I can get them to notice you. And don't create no fuss, because when they look over there, I want them to know that you're still my child. Whose damsel is this in the midst of the field, leaning behind the rest of the outcasts? Who is she? Can the world tell that you belong to me in trouble? On the outside looking in, when you leave this church and you at work and somebody's made you mad and you getting ready to cuss them out, or is that just my testimony? That's just me? Okay. Can the world still tell that you've been called? Do you look like a Potter's House member when things don't go your way? I'm going to tell Bishop if you don't. It's time that we start to learn the lessons that come when we have been isolated. To take that opportunity to really work on ourselves. The next time that I felt isolated, I was going through a divorce. And I felt like everything was out of my control. It was kind of dragging along. I moved back home with my parents, saving up for this house. And I said the only thing I really felt like I could control was how I felt about, like, my body and my self-esteem. And, you know, I thought, well, I'll start working out. I'll start eating right. And, you know, maybe I could just focus on what I can control, on making what I can make right work. Like, maybe the only job I have is gleaning in the fields, but maybe I'll do that to the best of my abilities and God will fill in the rest of the gap. And so when I started to focus more on myself, then I got an email from a publisher who wanted to do a book deal. And I was like, didn't y'all hear about the divorce? Didn't y'all know I was isolated? I'm being punished. Y'all still want to use me?
Oh, he's a wonder in my
soul. I feel that, y'all.
Ladies and gentlemen, the gospel is on your radio. This is KAYT, Gina, Alexandria, 88.1. K255BT, Monroe, West Monroe, 98.9. K223BI, Greenwood, Shreveport, 92.5.